At first glance, it might seem that Le Prince had cut out the heart of his patent. He had discarded the spinning disc viewing device from the design. He had described a second viewing device but relinquished claims for patent protection for it. And now, his more general claims for inventing a process for capturing and reproducing motion had gone. What remained seemed like a few technical details. But these details, such as his claim for focusing during the filming of continuous movement, contained some of the new fundamentals of an approaching phenomenon, film. But Le Prince wasn't out of the woods yet. On April 12, 1887, the Patent Office gave its reply to Le Prince's amendments. Claim 3 of the patent application was found to be anticipated by the patent of wing number 78408, 1868. Now this was an odd one. Simon Wing's 1868 patent was for a device for a multiplying camera, a still camera with several lenses that took a number of photographs at the same time to increase productivity. More than that, in terms of the complexity and scope of the design, Wing's invention was relatively slight and simple. Wing had simply patented a plate mechanism that was designed to help block out light leaking into the lenses and ensured that shutters opened and closed over all the lenses simultaneously. A number of springs in the device meant that even if the lenses were pulled back from the shutter plate, effectively moved to zoom in or out, the pieces were still pushed together as much as possible to avoid light leakage into the lenses. Also, he made small compartments for each lens, again to stop light bleeding in. All this was useful without being revolutionary and possibly not even relevant to Le Prince. As for the simultaneously opening shutters, the plate in the camera that would move up or down, acting as a shutter, if it moved upwards, would let in light into the bottom row of lenses first. Wing designed a plate with 9 holes in a 3x3 grid, so that as it moved up or down, all 9 apertures would be aligned with 9 camera lenses at the same time. If Le Prince's suspicions of corruption within the Patent Office were to be taken seriously, then this is the one objection which might provoke most interest. Having finally understood so many of the nuances of Le Prince's other specifications, the Patent Office was now guilty of missing a basic point in Le Prince's work, that his shutters were built to go off separately, in order and in quick succession, so as to capture the different stages of a subject's movements. Wing, on the other hand, a portraitist working on tintype sheets which could not be duplicated, had simply designed a modification to a machine that was a cost-cutting and time-saving device, a way of taking essentially the same picture several times at once. In fact, Wing here was going to great lengths not to do what the Le Prince machine did. Nevertheless, his 1868 patent was now cited as prior art against Le Prince's application. Having looked at Wing's patent, Le Prince and his lawyers would doubtless have seen the issue immediately, and their response came a week after the objection, on April the 19th, 1887. So let's look. The Patent Office cited Wing in their rejection of Le Prince's Claim 3. So first of all, because the claims have been taken out, put back in, amended and taken out again, what are we supposed to be looking at now? Claim 3 was now a paragraph that claimed for a series of lenses in combination with a frame of lens tubes that the lenses moved in and out of to focus. Now, Le Prince took out the claim and he replaced it with a new claim that was virtually identical, the only difference being that Le Prince made explicit the fact that the lens tubes moved for changing the focus during successive exposure in combination with a series of successively operated shutters for closing the lens tubes. It was the successive nature of the exposures, as opposed to simultaneous, that now differentiated Le Prince's claim from Wing's patent. And if you remember from last episode, Le Prince did mention successive and continuous exposures, just not in this particular claim, and so he simply added it into this specific claim as well, as if he were gently buttonholing the patent examiner, cornering him politely and saying, "I take one photograph at a time." And it seemed to have worked. In a telegram to Le Prince's patent lawyers, Munn and Co., dated 23rd of April 1887, they were told that Le Prince's photographic case will be allowed today, and a note written at the top of a page in the US patent wrapper, and that's the bundle of correspondence between Le Prince and the patent office, has the application as allowed 23rd April. So that was it. Le Prince had done it. He had his patent application approved. And then, just days later, Le Prince, or his lawyers, went and did something that almost ruined everything. The Shadow Traps, Episode 32, Successively, Continuously, and in Combination With. It was 6 months since Le Prince's patent application had gone into the patent office, and the continued delays and rejections of many of the claims were weighing heavily on both Louis and Lizzie. Apart from the understandable frustrations of this protracted business, the possibility of corruption in the patent office was becoming a concern. Why was patent examiner William Burke coming up with objection after objection and only now referring to Dumont, Orome, Muybridge and Wing as prior art after not mentioning them for the first months of the application? Le Prince's unease around the safety of his designs against the unwanted attentions of rival inventors was crystallizing into a decision to travel back across the Atlantic to continue his work in Europe, although this decision was also influenced by the superior resources available to Le Prince in Leeds and Paris in the form of workshops, foundries, and the assistance of engineers from his father-in-law's firm, Whitley Partners. Now the US patent application was well underway, and at the point where Le Prince was more confident of its success, if he left New York now, it would also be an opportunity to secure European patents for his machine. And so, Le Prince made preparations for his departure. He had some obligations in terms of maintaining the scenery for Théophile Poilpot's latest cyclorama. However, he had already come up with an ingenious solution to this. The panoramas contained real shrubbery in the foreground that blended into the painted foliage on the giant canvas, and maintaining this seems to have been Le Prince's responsibility. He had replaced the real foliage with coloured, dried replacements, and this allowed him to step away from his cyclorama work. In April 1887, Le Prince described his work on a single lens camera to his friend Henry Wolfe. Wolfe offered to raise a necessary capital to put the more elaborate machines it was his purpose to build on the market, or to give exhibitions to the public on his return to New York. It's not known whether the more elaborate machines meant his 16 lens camera, or simply a finished version of the single-lens model, or if Le Prince agreed to take up his offer. But within a small circle at least, Le Prince's work was getting people's attention. Now, as for Le Prince's suspicions that all might not be as it seemed with his patent application, according to Lizzie, Le Prince had heard rumours about unscrupulous fellow inventors that had led him to believe it might be prudent to leave New York. As Lizzie would write, "One day, when I was very heartsick and depressed about his going away, he said very quietly and gravely that he had heard of queer things and that he might be safer away." But Le Prince did seem clear about his next moves, for on top of everything else, the time seemed right to continue work in Europe because, as we've just seen, Le Prince's patent application had been allowed by the Patent Office. Except, for some reason, just over a week after the Patent Office signed off on the designs, just when Le Prince seemed to be home and dry, he submitted a request, filed on May the 2nd, to reinstate an earlier claim. This claim had been one of the ones the Patent Office had specifically rejected, and so Le Prince had taken it out. And now he was claiming he had taken it out by mistake and was asking for it to be put back. At this point, keeping track of the claims taken out and the claims left in is like keeping a track of confetti, so I will summarise very crudely the claims that at this point were in the patent application at the point where it had been allowed, and that's on the 23rd of April 1887. And remember that the several pages of diagrams and detailed explanations of how the machine worked, they all remained. What we're interested in is a page or so at the very end of all this, which contain the claims, where Le Prince lists how the machine is new, what elements are seen as eligible for patent protection. And in that section, three claims made it thus far. The first was for a photographic receiver with a series of lenses and a series of shutters and the means to operate them successively and continuously in combination with intermittently moving rolls of film. Claim two was for the lenses and shutters operated successively and continuously in combination with the film rollers moving the film and a plate which pushed forward to stop the film momentarily. And if you remember my explanations of how Le Prince's single lens camera would work, you might recognise this as a form of the intermittent mechanism whereby a plate pushed forwards traps and arrests the film, allowing it to be exposed. And claim three was for the combination of lenses and the frame that held the focusing tubes and the means for moving the lenses in the tubes to focus whilst filming, because remember, Le Prince had gone back and inserted the word successively so that every claim made certain they covered a machine shooting successively and continuously. So what was it that Le Prince's lawyers wanted back in? And if you can bear with me, here's a claim they requested be reinstated. The photographic receiver provided with a series of lenses in combination with a series of shutters and means substantially as described for operating the shutters successively and continuously. At first hearing, it doesn't sound as if this claim offers anything that hasn't been included in the other three claims. Going over it again slowly, the only element not found elsewhere is a very specific assertion that the lenses work in combination with the shutters. Patent law language is necessarily pedantic. There are lots of things working in combination with something else in this patent. Those two words, in combination, were used to connect lenses and shutters with other things, but not yet lenses with shutters. Le Prince wanted to go back and add that in. It feels like he's tightening up a potential loophole that is so small it might be negligible but needs covering just in case. And it is so small it is hard to notice what the difference is between this requested addition and what is already in there. Claim 1 is lenses and shutters in combination with moving film. Claim 2 is lenses and shutters in combination with a plate pushed forward to trap and release film. Claim 3 is a means of focusing lenses in combination with the shutters. And all that's missing was lenses in combination with shutters. Le Prince needed everything to be in combination with everything else. And every connection had to be specified, could not be assumed, or it would not be covered. He was dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And Le Prince and his lawyers might have felt that this was such a small addition to ask for, that the Patent Office might just reconsider and agree that it was allowable. Except that they didn't. On May the 4th, 1887, the Patent Office wrote back and said that no good reason could be found for changing their original decision to reject the claim. What would Le Prince do? Would he simply quit while he was ahead and make do with a patent that, if not worded exactly as he wished, was nevertheless comprehensive in its descriptions and reasonable in its claims? Or would he push, driven by his relentless perfectionism as well as his desire to make his patent protection as tight as possible? Next episode, we will see how this last-minute self-inflicted obstacle resulted in a response from Le Prince's lawyers that sowed the seeds for one of the most enduring conspiracy theories connected to this unlucky inventor. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Shadow Traps. If you'd like to learn more about the project or to support it in any way, please go to the Patreon page at www.patreon.com/theshadowtraps. Thank you very much for listening.